Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, as Pope Benedict meets with members of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, we hear all about the challenges of communicating the faith in our digitalized culture. And an African mosaic. One of the experts attending the recent Synod on Africa shares his impressions and his hopes for its long-term impact. A Vatican meeting with no official theme or long-winded title. A work in progress where members are encouraged to really speak their minds. And a repeated call for more young lay men and women to be part of the decision-making process. Welcome to the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, the Vatican office charged with charting the Catholic Church's response to the challenges of the modern media world. The Council deals with all forms of communication, from the printed press through cinema, radio and television, and all the latest digital technologies. It's responsible for coordinating media coverage of major papal events, as well as for training and supporting Catholic journalists, film producers or communications specialists in countries across the globe. And although it continues to work in traditional ways, such as a papal message for World Communications Day each year, it's quite clear that the major area of current concern is how the Church can respond to the huge challenges posed by the new digital technologies.
I tell you honestly, I think that today the major problems are not connected with the real media, but the new technologies are creating in our world a new culture, like digital culture.
Archbishop Claudio Celi is president of the Communications Council, which has just concluded its plenary assembly with a papal audience on Thursday morning. At the start of the meeting, Archbishop Celi told me he wanted it to be a real work in progress, bringing members and consultants to brainstorm about the best ways of dealing with the enormous challenges posed by this new digital culture.
Our task is to see how we can have a dialogue with such a culture created, promoted by the new technologies, and how we are present in this global village. I think that this is our challenge that we have to accept, because along the roads of the new technologies, we are meeting people. You know how, for example, these social networks are a meeting point of hundreds of millions of people. And so our big question that is really giving us the feeling of our activity is, what are we going to do?
Your council has already started some activities using Facebook and other social networks. What else will you be looking at?
You realized correctly that there is not a special theme. Because I thought that it was important to sit down together, to work together, to envision some pastoral guidelines for the Church for the next 2-5 years. Also, if I tell you honestly, things are moving so quickly that it's so difficult to say that we are making progress for 5 years, because we don't know what the situation will be within 5 years.
I think there's a feeling among many of us that we really need to get a better sense from people in communications around the world what their most pressing issues and needs are.
Among the members of the Pontifical Council is Cardinal Roger Mahoney, Archbishop of Los Angeles since 1985. He's long been a bit of a pioneer in seeking creative ways of making the Church's voice heard above the din of Tinseltown, reality TV and the instant internet culture. He told me and my colleague Cindy Wooden from Catholic News Service, it's essential to focus on what the Church is trying to say, rather than simply rushing to embrace the latest digital technologies.
We tend to look at media and means of communication before we start really thinking about what is communication and what is communication in the Church. How do we begin with God's Word? How do we share that? We seem to run too quickly to the technology advances. and not look as critically at the content and what is it we're trying to accomplish. I'll give you just a personal example. I had a Facebook spot on Facebook. Well, last week I closed it down because it wasn't accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish, so I began a blog instead, because that gives me, I think, the opportunity to communicate what I'm trying to do, rather than, I'm not trying to create a network of people. I'm trying to present ideas for everybody. So, you know, I think we all have to kind of stop and from time to time say, well, what is it? There's just this rush to the latest technology. So, do I want a Twitter? No, I don't want a Twitter because I don't think I have enough to say in 140 characters that often that anybody cares about.
But it's very difficult, isn't it, to make your voice heard in this world where so many of the Catholic blogs, the Christian blogs, contain material which is so unchristian, so venomous many occasions.
That's one of the issues we all have to deal with, is that the freedom of internet in all these new communications have also given rise to a lot of negativity, racism, prejudice, you name it. So how do we, in the church, how do we become a voice of reason, of faith, of hope, of respecting others? You know, so I think we have a good opportunity in the church, and I think we're doing that better now, to model what or how to use these new communications technologies with the content of the gospel and the teaching of the church.
It's also interesting, though, that these new technologies in a way show up the different faces of the Catholic Church, and therefore the difficulty of providing one message is increased, isn't it?
Well, and one of the things we've talked about is what on the internet is Catholic? Anybody can use that term, and everybody's using that term. There are a lot of strange things out there. And I think one of the services that we can provide, in particularly, I'm thinking the United States, is monitoring and giving people good links to really appropriate sites. So, I mean, even coming from this meeting, we're redoing our own archdiocesan website, but I'm now very much convinced that we're going to put a lot more links on it to help people navigate through this stuff so that they don't have to figure out what's authentic or what's useful or helpful. That'll have been done for them, and recommended sites will be given to them.
So hopefully Vatican Radio will be up on the top of that.
Well, of course.
Catholic News Service.
Well, actually, Catholic News Service is one of them.
You've always been something of a pioneer, haven't you, really, in the world of media, in the church, in the United States in particular. Are you sometimes frustrated with the slow pace of change, the difficulty the church has in communicating?
Well, yes, I am frustrated at times. Even our own bishops' conference, my idea of a general meeting of the bishops' conference is not the way we do it now. I don't know why we keep getting tons of printed material, where I think the meeting room for the bishops everybody should have a laptop, and we view the documents in front of us, and we see amendments being made and things incorporated right in front of us without having to keep printing out millions of pages of things. So there is some level of frustration. And I know even communicating with the bishops' conference, they set a deadline a couple of years ago and said, after this date, there will be no more general mailings. And there aren't. And so it's forced the bishops and their offices to get online. So I'm very excited about it. I'm not discouraged, because we keep moving forward. And the more we can involve our young people, our young adults now and the younger generation, we got to invite them in to help us chart the course, because they grew up with this medium.
Many of the church leaders I spoke to agree that there must be a greater willingness to listen to the voices of young people, women in particular, when it comes to communicating the Christian message to modern society. At this plenary meeting, there was, however, only one woman sitting around the conference table. She was Daniela Frank from Germany's Catholic Media Council, director of an organisation called Cameco, which coordinates support and development for media and communications in countries across the developing world.
I think it's very important to keep in mind that communications has a great variety of means. You know, I think especially in continents like Asia and Africa, traditional communications like street theatre, like puppets, like dance, music, I think still have a very strong role to play. And these are also cheap means, you know, you're very close to the oral culture of the people, and so say, how can we to respond to those needs? I think in the process we are currently going through, it's very important to help people to understand what is the most relevant media for my target group, what type of message do I have, and how do I communicate it. Sometimes there's a bit of thinking we can only do good communication apostolate when we have a television channel, a big national radio network, and say, well, slowly, slowly. So what do you really need in a country with a variety of languages, which is often the case in Africa? It doesn't make much sense to have a national radio station, for example, because you would have to cover 20 or 30 languages. But it makes a lot of sense to have a local radio station. And to start a local radio station is not as expensive as to have a big thing. You know, with 20,000 euro, you already have a good basis to kick off. And it might be more important to also invest a lot in formation of the people who will work with you in creating a network of correspondence from the different parishes, from the different villages. So there is a financial need, but I think we often can develop many very relevant and effective things with not too much money.
So the whole question then of the digital culture, if you like, you're saying is actually less relevant perhaps in many of these countries.
It's relevant in many of these countries, but I think it's also not just the solution to any type of problem we are facing. You know, in Africa, for example, we have enormous growth rates in access to internet, but because the starting point was so low. I think it's becoming an important issue, especially in urban cities, in the capitals. It's surely also in the southern continents an important issue for young people. And as church, I think we have to pay more attention to the specific culture of young people. So the digital culture is part of that. The internet access provides a lot of possibilities to receive information, to exchange, to have a certain level of interactivity which was not possible before. So I think it's important to pay attention to that and to see which type of support can we give to allow this type of access, but also at the service of traditional media. So I think it's this twofold thing. It's not just now we do everything on internet, but what type of service can internet access provide to media which are also more accessible for the people on the spot?
We may feel that we're way behind, we're not responding. But when you're dealing with the world, as we are in this kind of a situation, this helps us to appreciate things accomplished and things yet to be done.
As well as being a consultant to the Vatican's Communications Council, Father Tom Rozica is CEO of Salt and Light Television, Canada's first national Catholic TV network. He's also one of a team that's been charged by the council with drawing up a new set of communications guidelines based on the wide-ranging discussions of this plenary assembly.
Some of the challenges we're facing in media and communications in North America are not the same in South America and Africa and Asia. On the other hand, a group like this, I've been very inspired by listening to the people and by seeing a real desire to get the message out. Shared blessings, many shared frustrations. There's been a lot of comments about some of the miscommunications coming from the church, especially over the past year, because all of us who are working in communications suffer when that happens. And so I think one of the things we're asking of the Universal Church is help us to communicate the message. Get your acts together here at this level so we can help communicate the message at our levels in our different countries and regions and whatever.
Certainly, we talk of the Vatican moving in centuries, and even if we do now have websites and we do have the modern technology to be able to respond to these current challenges, it's very difficult to get a sense of the profound message of Christianity across in this instant, this age of instant voice bites, instant messaging, Twitter and so on. Is it possible to do that?
It is. You know, it's one thing to have the wineskins, and I think the structures are in place, but now we have to have the wine. We can't be using old wine in these new wineskins. And at times, I think that's the story of the church. We have the structures, we have the money that we put into these things. Now you need the people to fill these things. And one of the ways we've done that in Canada through Salt and Light is involving the young people. It's their generation. You know, that's highly criticized sometimes. People have said to me, even here, how can you possibly have a television network that's run by young adults? I said, well, number one, they're young adults who are deeply committed to the faith. They have a very intelligent, a great sense of joy, and they're communicating that it spills over. And we take risks, and we also have great successes with that. And that's something I think that the church at this level needs to embrace a little more.
My thanks there to Father Tom Rozica, CEO of Canada's Salt and Light Television. And earlier you heard Daniela Frank from Germany's Catholic Media Council, Cardinal Roger Mahoney, Archbishop of Los Angeles, and Archbishop Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. And don't forget to check our website, www.vaticanradio.org/English, for full details of Pope Benedict's audience with members of the Pontifical Council on Thursday morning. With the Synod for Africa now over, the bishops and other experts from countries across the continent and beyond have returned home enriched by the very vibrant and encouraging experience of the three-week meeting that concluded last Sunday. But what will be the lasting impact of that experience? How will the optimism and upbeat tone of the final Synod statement be put into practice in the very different and often very challenging pastoral contexts in which the bishops are working? Those are questions I discussed with one of the Synod experts, Jesuit Father Michael Cherney, who heads the Nairobi-based Africa Jesuit AIDS Network, coordinating the Society of Jesus' response to the pandemic in over 30 countries across sub-Saharan Africa.
Well, my lasting impression since I work in Africa and I visit Africa is that this was a unique opportunity. Usually, you get on a plane and you go to one place and you see a bit. This time, you sit in a hall and in the space of about 10 days, you visit all of Africa. And you hear about Africa not from tour guides, but from pastors who are deeply concerned. And each one is free to speak what is on his heart. There's no pre-established agenda. There's no pre-established order of topics. And so you get one view or vignette after another. My image of it is, it's as if you were sitting in the back of a great church, and in the front, there were workmen artisans putting up a mosaic, and they were haphazardly putting up the mosaic one piece at a time, and you are observing or taking it in, and at the end you have this extraordinary panorama that no one else could ever have, and that is a vivid picture of Africa today from the hearts of Africa's pastors. I think it's an extraordinary thing.
How happy were you with the statement that came out? How truly did it reflect all the pieces of that mosaic?
Well, that's not what it tried to do, so I'll rephrase that. How did it reflect the spirit and the mood? Because the message is not meant to be summary. It's not meant to lay out all the things. It's meant to communicate. It's a message now from these same pastors to their people, to their churches in Africa. And so the important thing is that it touched on many significant topics. But the thing that strikes you is the mood, and that mood is courageous and hopeful. Courageous to name problems and to address those responsible, and hopeful, saying that Africa is not to be reduced to its many problems, that the resources for solving those problems are in Africa, that Africa is getting up the way the blind man in the gospel at the end of the synod, the blind man calls out to Jesus and the bystanders say, get up, he's calling you. And Africa is being called, get up, you're being called.
A wonderful spirit of optimism. How easy is it for these pastors who go back home to their own countries to convey that and to really start living that out in their daily lives?
Well, they are the same pastors who came here a month ago. So in one sense, they don't have, let's say, a new work plan. They don't have necessarily new resources. They don't necessarily have new people. But I think they have a more coherent, if inchoate, maybe inexpressible, but complete vision of the challenges facing not their local church, which might be very vast, but still it's local, but the church on the continent as a whole. And something which all of them, I think, will say is that the church on the continent as a whole is linked with the church everywhere else. One of the things that I think touched the bishops very much is that as we began, after the Holy Father on the first Monday morning gave a fine meditation on the prayer or the hymn to the Holy Spirit, the first to speak were the delegate visitors from the other conferences, from Asia, from Europe, from the United States, from Latin America. And they set a kind of tone, but I would say also a kind of an awareness that this was not an African synod. This was a synod of the universal church about Africa. The majority of participants were from Africa, but it isn't a continental church. It's the worldwide church concerned throughout the synod with the church in Africa. And I think they appreciated that concrete establishment of solidarity at the beginning.
There was also a lot of talk, though, beyond the solidarity about changing relationships between Africa and the West, or Africa and Europe, if you like, wasn't there?
There was. I would say there were two main themes there. The first was that kind of one-way exploitation of Africa's resources has got to be a thing of the past. This come and take and go away and leave behind nothing but a mess, that's just unacceptable. And to such an extent that you could say, the Africans shouldn't have to say that. I mean, anyone who comes to help himself to the resources of someone else should know that you don't just take and go and leave a mess behind.
And there were a lot of practical suggestions about monitoring of contracts. I mean, really practical ideas to try and resolve this, weren't there?
There were many different calls for responsibility and transparency. And even on this one issue that we're talking about now, the relationships with, let's say, the West or Europe or the developed world, maybe we should call it the exploiting world, it wasn't a narrow accusation saying, oh, all you multinationals are evil and we Africans are simply your victims. No, there was a balanced appeal to economic and political leaders in Africa to be responsible too, because I don't think there was ever a mention of exploitation from the outside without adding that this was done with the complicity and to the enrichment, the often obscene enrichment of African leaders. So there was it was a double-edged sword. And then the second change had to do with questions of values, if you like, questions of ideology. And there also there was a heightened sensitivity that those who come to Africa to help, agencies, international agencies, church agencies, that they be respectful of African values and that they not use Africa sort of as a field of ideological expansionism or imposition. That Africa is not there to be the kind of the scene for battles that were born elsewhere and that should be resolved elsewhere. Aid is very much appreciated and every kind of assistance. But when it comes conditioned and ideologically loaded, it's best that it not come at all. And I think the bishops are, if not completely, at least to a new extent, more sensitive to the baggage that sometimes accompanies so-called gifts or so-called assistance.
This is an area that resonates particularly with your work, the African Jesuit AIDS Network, doesn't it?
Well, it does, because I don't know if there's any area of human life which is more emotional and more susceptible to, let's say, great battles over ideas and values. And so, yes, there is sensitivity that while AIDS, in a sense, has to be fought with every means and with every energy that we have, on the other hand, there are ways and there are ways. And the long-standing values which the church has been trying to promote, to teach, to form, to inculcate in Africa are not simply there to be tossed overboard in the name of an emergency. And I would say for myself, I think I appreciate that AIDS is seen by the bishops not as an emergency, but as one of the many serious problems that we face. And so this idea that, well, because it's an extreme case, therefore we can abandon all principles, we can abandon all tradition, that's just not acceptable.
What did you personally take away from this synod that will help you in your work as you organize this mission of the Jesuits in so many countries of Africa?
Well, without a doubt, the most important thing I take away is acquaintance and I would say even friendship with so many bishops. The Society of Jesus is there to serve the church, but we don't always necessarily know the bishops in large numbers or internationally. We might know them in our own country, but not so many from all over the continent. And so I feel, if I can put it this way, that the African Jesuit AIDS Network is more at home in the church in Africa today than perhaps it was before the synod. And we have come to appreciate the need even more than we did before, and I hope we will be even readier to be of assistance if we can.
If we're looking at ways in which other countries, other continents can support, can best support Africa today, what is that in your view?
I think my answer will sound quite modest. But if you asked, I think you asked right at the beginning what was so unusual about the synod. What's unusual is taking the time to listen. Taking the time to listen. Maybe we forget that in this world of sound bites and instant images that we don't really listen very much. And certainly we don't listen at great length. And I don't think we ever take 10 days to listen to anything about anything. So I think, while it was never put in this way, I think that if the church in those parts of the world that sent delegate representatives and therefore will hear about the synod, I think that if they could think about listening to Africa, inviting and encouraging Africa to speak up, I think that would be already a very great first step. And maybe I should put it stronger, it's the indispensable first step. And so from now on, if we could resolve to listen with the assumption that the basic elements of the solution, whatever the problem is, are going to be found in Africa, that would be a good point of departure.
My thanks there to Father Michael Czerny, coordinator of the Africa Jesuit AIDS Network. You can find them on the web at www.jesuitaids.net. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on our website, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.